The serve, sliced, backhand return. Rafa with a backhand volley, and it's over. Game, set, and match. His third U.S. Open Men's Singles Championship.
Sloan from deep beyond the baseline plays a backhand. Keys a forehand. Sloan just hammering away. Now steps into a forehand. It hangs over. Forehand netted by Keys, and Sloan Stephens is the 2017 U.S. Open champion. A warm hug at the net between the two friends.
Here comes a big smile with Sloan. She can't believe it.
Welcome to Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. I'm Steve Flink, and my guest on today's podcast made history of the highest order over the years and established himself, in my view, almost inarguably as the greatest American man ever to play the game of tennis, and as one of the best of all time from any country. Pete Sampras became the youngest man ever to win the U.S. Open at the age of 19 in 1990. He would eventually claim the crown five times, a men's record equaled only by Jimmy Connors and Roger Federer. Pete set another record by finishing 6 years in a row, 1993 through 1998, as the number one ranked player in the world on the official ATP computer. He won 14 Grand Slam singles titles altogether. Through it all, Pete conducted himself commendably. He was the ultimate sportsman, a credit to his profession, and a man of unimpeachable class and character. Thanks for joining us, Pete.
No problem, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Pete, before we get to that stunning triumph in 1990 at the U.S. Open, let's just briefly pause and have you reflect on that incredible win you had over Mats Wielander the year before, which must have sort of opened your eyes to a lot of things. I remember at the time, you were pretty surprised that you beat him. Mats was the defending champion. It's 1989. You're playing under the lights, and somehow you beat him in five sets. What do you recall about that match?
I recall at that point I was just trying to figure out this game and figure out the tour. I was only on the tour for a couple years and, you know, just trying to get my ranking into the top 100 and just here we go. And got involved in a match with Matt and just my first time on center court. And obviously I was a bit intimidated. I was a little nervous. And, you know, playing someone like Matt who has a game that's not going to overpower you, I could play a little bit. Was like I was playing Lendo, who could kind of blow me off the court at that time in my career. And so, going to this match with Max, I know he was, you know, going through some personal things at the time, and maybe wasn't on top of his game. But I just, you know, remember just trying to get into the net, trying to serve him volley, trying to put some pressure on him, and just remember I, you know, got involved in this match and managed to win it. And I was very excited. It was a big moment, biggest win of my career at that stage. And it was just a great feeling. The crowd got behind me. And it was, you know, I was still, you know, I was a young 18-year-old. And so I felt, didn't have a ton of experience out there. And to beat Mats was a big moment. It was the start of something, you know, pretty big at the Open. And obviously the next year, things got a little more serious.
Yeah, but was it an eye opener of sorts? Because it was a big win. You're 18, as you said, inexperienced, and I just remember you said at the time you really didn't go on the court expecting to beat him.
No, I didn't think I was going to. He was top two in the world, and I just felt like I was still very young and green, and just my game wasn't quite developed, and you know I just had my weapon and my serve and my forehand. And you know, Matt's an experienced player, won many majors, so I felt like that was the major underdog. But I got caught up in the match and you know, played a little bit more as we went on. And next thing I knew, I had a match point and just put my arms up in the air after the win and just sort of like, whoa, this just happened. And it was exciting, and it definitely made me feel like I could start playing with some different pros. I don't feel like I belonged yet, but it was, you know, just getting a little more comfortable, and it definitely it takes some time. But that was my first introduction to a center court match against Mats Wielander, who was a defending champion. It just sort of like, okay, you got a little more comfortable out there, and I think I ended up losing the next match. But I just felt like it was a huge step, but it was definitely a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. So Pete, you know, the next year, now you're seated 12th, so you'd made some. That was ample evidence of the stature you'd gained in that year from the time you beat Mats to coming back to the Open in 90. But You go out and you had this string of wins at beating Mooster from a set down in a very tough match, and he was a tough customer, and then obviously knocking out Lendl, then beating McEnroe, and then defeating Agassi in the final. I mean, reflect a little bit on that run, because it seemed to me that with each match from Mooster straight on there through Lendl, mm-hmm. through McEnroe and Agassi, you seemed to get better and better with every round.
Yeah, I did, and I remember just at that stage in my career, being seeded 12, my goal was to get to the second week. You know, that was an achievement for me, and I got into the second week, and next thing I know, I'm playing Lendl, and Ivan is someone that I practiced with, that I knew a little bit, that when I did practice with him, I felt pretty comfortable. So it was pretty, obviously, he's won the event, a number of times, so I felt pretty good going into the match, and won the first couple sets, lost the next two, just a lack of experience and just being able to try to close them out. And then the fifth set, I stepped it up and did what I was, I did what I did.
But it looked like it was slipping away. As you said, you dropped the third and fourth, and how did you manage to sort of get back on top of things? And you obviously served extremely well in the fifth.
Yeah, I did. I remember serving well, and this is the first event that I missed, so it really did come together. But I think losing the third and fourth was, I think, lack of experience, maybe a lack of strength, being able to close them out and kind of have that 1-2 punch. I just didn't kind of let up a little bit mentally. And in the fifth set, I just knew I had one set to go, and I gave it a good push. Hit a couple big serves at the right time, and Ivan, I think at that stage was slowing down a little bit, maybe not quite as confident, and I seemed to take advantage of it, and we'll get that one break, and when sometimes when you use that one break, it gives you new life, and that's what happened, and went on to beat him, and that's when things got a little more serious. I just remember waking up the next day on the front page of the sports page, and I'm like, okay, this is not just a young kid trying to come up. You're into the semifinals. You beat someone that's won there 5 times, and it just changed. Everything changed a little bit. Not positive or negative. I just felt that people were looking at me a little bit more. And I remember I had 2 days off before I played McEnroe, and again another matchup that I liked. I played John earlier in the summer and beat him. I practiced with him. I wasn't that intimidated with John or the court.
Why did you like the matchup, Pete?
Well, I liked John's matchup because, again, I felt like I could had some time to play. I liked playing lefties at that time, and I could get him out wide on the backhand. And John, again, was a little bit on the older side, and he was not as dominant as he was when he was 25. And I played him in the summer, and I got to know John. I think when you get to know some of your idols personally, there's a certain edge that goes away. You feel a little more comfortable out there, and I just felt that with Ivan and John, just because they were welcoming me of being a young pro, and they're always really nice to me. So I felt less intimidated, and that was a situation with both Ivan and John. And against John, I just felt like I beat him earlier in the year, I think, in Toronto. And it just felt good going into the match. Felt like I was comfortable on the court. Woke up not nervous. I slept well for that second week. Nothing to lose, really. 19 years old. I'm just kind of coming out of nowhere. And got into the match with John. And, remember my serve really started to kick in. And I was returning well. I was moving well. And felt no nerves, no pressure, and as a result, everything clicked. And I played even better against John than I did against Ivan, and felt felt like I was kind of in the zone.
So there you are, Pete. You are getting into the zone, and there you are playing Agassi, and obviously, most people thought, given that Andre had been top 3 in the world even 2 years earlier than that, this was going to be his time. And this was going to be his breakthrough at the Open. Did that help you in a way that maybe you were still a little under the radar, and that that Andre had come off the win over Becker in the semis and that everybody was really thinking this was his moment?
100%. I, no question, he was the favorite going in. He was already established himself as one of the best players in the world. I was a young and up-and-coming, very green young player. And, you know, one thing that just helped me was that there's no time between the semi and the final. I just, you know, like I said, went to bed, slept great, ate great, woke up, not nervous, nothing to lose, playing Andre, okay, let's give it a go. And I just got in the zone, you know, from the very beginning of the match, I felt comfortable, I was swimming well, I was moving well, I was clearly just even getting better. And I could tell Andre was feeling the pressure, felt the weight of all his celebrity, and now it's time to win his major. And I think he didn't play well, and he was uptight, and I did catch him off guard. And I just, you know, did everything perfectly, just served well, was hitting my ground strokes well, making him play. He was a little bit off, and as a result, the match went pretty quick, and next thing I knew, I was holding up the trophy, and that's when my life really changed. But I just remember getting into that zone for that weekend, and then against Andre, who was the clear favorite to beat him the way I did, was a bit shocking. I caught him off guard.
Sure. So, I mean, you blitzed him that day 4-3-2, and it did change your life irrevocably. A tough year in 91, but you had your share of success. But now you come back in 92 to the Open. And that was another turning point because you beat Currier in a physically pretty tough four-set semifinal. I know you weren't feeling great after that match, got some IV treatment. It was a tough night. And then you play Edberg. So just describe why that loss to Edberg, which was a four-setter where you were one set all and serving for the third set, eventually lost it in a tiebreaker and went down in four sets. Why that one really got you in the pit of your stomach and why it disturbed you so much and why it sort of changed the course of your career?
Yeah, well, up to that point, for those couple of years in between the Opens, I felt, wasn't sure what I wanted out of the game. You know, I wanted to do well, I wanted to win, but what was I willing to sacrifice, and how much will did I have, how much heart did I have, how much when it hurt did I want to push through it? And for those couple of years, I'm not sure if I was 100% totally willing to sacrifice. And then I got into the final against Edberg and woke up feeling good, woke up not nervous. I was happy I was in the final and got into this match against Stefan, who was more established player, won more majors. And I just remember in the match, he didn't really play well. I certainly didn't feel like I played all that well. Lost his cup to a set tiebreaker and the ball popped. And I felt my energy in that fourth set completely went away. I didn't dig deep. I don't want to say packed it in. I mean, I almost felt like I went through the motions. And I knew that. I knew the truth of that, that when I lost that match and the weeks and months after that, I had looked myself in the mirror and really asked myself how I felt. And I think it was a combination of, you know, and a tough lesson that no one really cares who comes in second. And the fact that Stefan didn't play that well and I could have beaten him also stung me. And this sort of, I don't say quitting, I'm not using that word, but I just felt like I didn't push hard in that fourth set. I didn't fight hard to the very end. And it bothered me for months. It bothered me for the rest of my career. The fear of that feeling where I didn't give it at all, or give it my all. And I think that bothered me more than anything. That I just, from 90 to 92, I just, it was a kind of uncertainty. And in 92, after losing that in the way I did, I couldn't be more clear of what I wanted to do in my tennis and in my future and mentally, physically, my outlook on my tennis, my life. It completely shifted after, say, packing it in that fourth set. I mean, that kind of 30 minutes changed the next 15 years.
So in a strange way, it was something you almost needed to experience.
You know, I think so, Steve. I think I needed something that dramatic mentally for me to really get that light switch to turn on, to feel like, okay, what do you want out of this sport? What are you willing to sacrifice? You know, how bad do you want it when you're not feeling well or not playing well? And it definitely woke me up. I was this young kid, had a big serve, had all this talent, but, you know, mentally was always a little bit get down on myself and maybe didn't fight that hard. And I think that final just changed my whole outlook that I didn't want to feel that way. I didn't want to, you know, not, because it was, you know, there's only one winner. And that's what I did, the hard lesson that I learned, but it was the best lesson of my career, because from that point forward, you know, I didn't win every major final, I didn't win every tournament, but at least I felt like I fought hard and I didn't pack it in, because there's nothing worse than not coming through, not fighting that hard and having to sit with it for a few months.
Sure.
It's the worst feeling in the world. I mean, you just don't feel good. And it just changed my whole outlook. And, you know, it wasn't for that loss, you know, maybe my career might have gone differently. Maybe I would have learned that lesson in another way. And maybe all would have still worked out, but it was just, that's where the rubber hit the road. And that's where it just, it all shifted.
So, Pete, obviously it did kick in pretty quickly, because the next year you won your first Wimbledon, beat Courier in the finals, mm-hmm. come to the Open, hadn't had a great summer, but you ended up winning again at the Open, taking your second title. And it wasn't so much the semis and finals that were memorable, because you beat Peeling in a fairly uneventful final, straight sets routine, but the match that stood out to me from that tournament was this come-from-behind win over Chang in the quarters. Because Michael had beaten you 6 out of 8 times up until then in the pros, and he'd been kind of a constant thorn in your side, and you you really got inspired. Do you remember that? It was under the lights, and you played some electrifying tennis.
Yeah, that's when I started to. You know, Michael always gave me trouble, even in the juniors and in the young pros. He just kind of had my number. I had this mental block against him, and I think that match, I think I lost an early tiebreaker in the first set, and then I think I steamrolled them like the last couple, 2-1, and I really felt like I got a hold of his game, and I relaxed myself and overpowered him those last couple sets, and I just never played flawless tennis, just dominating, doing everything I wanted to do. And, you know, Michael, he gives you time to play. It's just a matter of putting it all together, and you can dominate a certain player like that. And that was a breakout win, and you know, got me even more confident and belonged a little bit more. And that was, I think Michael was highly ranked at the time, and it was a big win, not just beating him, but just on how I beat him, just trying to figure out one of my thorns. And I think from that match forward, I think I felt pretty good against Michael, but that was a big match.
So Pete, 2 years later, it was an extraordinarily important match. You talk about big matches, mm-hmm. because you and Andre Agassi that whole year had been sort of vying for the top spot, and he'd won in Australia over you, and then you won Wimbledon. Then Andre dominated the summer, 4 tournaments in a row, 26 yep. matches in a row, and there you are in the finals against him. And it was it one of the biggest matches of your career, and you came yep. through in 4 sets. Talk about how you managed to pull that off, because that was another occasion where many people thought it was going to be Agassi's tournament, and where you came through big time against him.
Yeah, I felt he was, you know, had a better summer, won, I think, 3 or 4 straight tournaments. I had a decent summer, but, you know, I always felt like in the big moments that I felt pretty comfortable and felt pretty relaxed. And, you know, getting into this match with Andre, and I've always felt like with Andre, if I play well and serve well and do the things I want to do, he's someone that if things go well and I'm playing well, that I can beat. And if I'm not, then I'm struggling against Andre. And I just remember from the very beginning of the match, you know, my serve was kicking, I was holding serve, and we got into this one set point in the first set.
Oh, that was a spectacular rally. I remember that one so well.
Yeah. I just remember it was a tough rally where, you know, I ended up getting it, and I just never felt feeling winded. I felt excited. I felt like it took a lot of wind out of his sails, and I just remember it just set the tone for the rest of the match. And I think from there, I won the second set, third set, he came back and stepped up his game. And then, you know, the fourth, I just remember just doing what I do and trying to serve well and get in and look for my spots and be aggressive. And you know, the rest served just, you know, I served over 20 aces in that match.
And, yeah, and four in one game was kind of a gem of a service game. And then just a quick comment about the end of it, because it seems sort of typical of so many big matches you played, in that suddenly at 5-all in the fourth, when it could be getting a bit dangerous, maybe going to a tiebreak, you get that timely break. You would either get it in the beginning of a set or the end, but you seem to have a knack for getting that one big break when you needed it. And this way you avoided having to go into a tiebreak and then served it out nicely in the last game. Talk about that aspect of you as a competitor.
Yeah, I just felt like one thing that was tough to play against me was my serve. And the easier I could hold serve, the more pressure that opponent felt on their service games. And with Andre, you know, I think he felt like if he missed a couple, or if I got hot for a couple minutes there, then that could potentially be the set or the match. And it's sort of my approach is, you know, just kind of set my tone, take my chances. If I don't break serve, I'm okay with that as long as I'm holding serve. And then, you know, eventually the pressure will hopefully break and I'll get an error out of him, or I'll step up my game and hit a big forehand or chip and charge. And then, you know, once I get that break, I just feel like I've got even more life. And that's when I, you know, seem to serve it out, you know, pretty handily. And so that's sort of my approach. And it really showed against Andre because of our matchups, and he returned so well with, like, okay, be patient, wait for your opportunity to maybe break them. Maybe he gets a little tight. Hold on to serve as best you can. And if you still even get broken, you can still have time to break him back. And that's just sort of always been my style of play. And it wasn't more evident against Andre because that was my toughest opponent. And it seemed like at the U.S. Open Finals, that's the way it's always been. You know, you get a shot, you want to take advantage of it, you get it, hold on to serve, and unless you've seen enough my matches where it goes quick, you know, it just, you can feel a few switches in the match where, you know, I get that little, you know, the little excitement of breaking and then I'm going to hold and then boom, I go from there. And
yeah, but Pete, you had that knack, don't you think? I mean, it just happened so many times though that you'd get the break, the one crucial break when you needed it, which you did there at 5-all in the fourth against Andre. I mean, don't you think that was one of your big strengths?
Yeah, just you know, trying to break him, doing the best I can, trying to find opportunities and ways to break him. And if it's, you know, running around on second serve and hit a big forehand or chipping and charging or putting up pressure while I get an error out of him, it's just trying to figure out a way. And he's a very tough guy to break because he, you know, kick it up my backhand and hit deep in my backhand. And it was just, he was a tough guy to break, but it was my, yeah, you know, my knack of trying to find a way to break. And once I do, you know, then I feel, okay, you got the ball in your hands and you got the best serve in the world and this is what you do and it should be automatic. You know, that was sort of my approach.
So, Pete, with that match, just briefly put in the context and the importance of the win. I remember you told me a few months later about, you know, you had that sort of waking up and having a certain fear of losing and the adrenaline's flowing, and you just knew how there were going to be ramifications. You needed that win at that time and seemed to deflate him for quite a while too. So wouldn't you say that was one of the two or three biggest matches of your career?
It really was. It's top two or three biggest matches for sure, because, you know, it sort of set the tone of who potentially was the best player in the world. As much as he had a great summer, I just felt like that just boosted me up. I think it deflated him, not only just for the next 2 months, I think it affected him for the next number of years, just because, you know, Andre's he's an emotional guy, and he worked so hard to get to that final, and, you know, shit was the favorite going in, probably, and he didn't get it. And I just think it took a lot of wind out of his sails and affected him. But again, it gave me more confidence. It gave me a bit of a boost, and it gave me a bit of a boost that he didn't recover all that well, because the next couple of years, I still did quite well. And it's just a big moment in the sport of tennis. I just remember transcended it. And Nike was doing their commercials and celebrities coming to the final, and it was two Americans, so different. I mean, it was really the pinnacle of maybe our careers, just as far as notoriety is concerned. And we kind of went different directions after that match, and it was just a big moment for me. You know, it was my third Open, and just the middle of my years that I was dominating. But it was a big match.
So, Pete, the next year you come back, and you had been really the best player in the world all year. A lot had happened, you know, obviously with Tim Gullickson and an emotional time for you and him passing away. And you hadn't won a major yet. You were winning a lot of tournaments. You clearly regarded as the best. And now you come to this match against Krejcia that everybody remembers so vividly, and where you threw up in the back of the court in the fifth set tiebreak. You willed your way to a fifth set tiebreak win from match point down, and then went on to beat Ivan Isovich and Chang over the weekend. Put that one in perspective, because you had to work awfully hard, and you were certainly on the brink there against Alex.
Well, it tells you from 92 to 96, I was a completely different player, and my will definitely showed in that match against Krejcia. And in 92, I probably would have packed it in. And I just remember, you know, on paper, it looked like I was a heavy favorite, but I knew Alex could play, and he could, he would make me work. And I just remember, I just didn't, and I mentioned this before, time my food right. I went out a little low on fuel, and, you know, I thought I was going to play kind of two or three. I ended up going out at five or something. It was just, it just felt, okay, I'm not sure I ate well enough for this match.
Yep.
And I got into this dogfight with him, and he was, again, hitting a kicker to my backhand and getting it up high and then hitting big forehands to my back. I just felt like I was doing a lot of work and I just felt myself getting a little tired, you know, come third and fourth sets. I just was hanging on. And on that surface, you know, I should dominate him, but I just remember he was doing a lot of things I didn't like. You know, he was making me work. I was, you know, just physically getting a little tired as the match was going on. And I could feel the weight of the match, and, you know, got involved in the fifth set and just kind of hanging on, and, you know, just, I'm not necessarily playing the right way. I'm getting involved in these ball rallies, and it's just, you know, it's one of those matches where this is going to be a will match. I knew it. Like, this is going to get ugly. You know, you're not, you don't have your best stuff making it work. So I felt like, okay, you're going to have to grit this one out. This happens every couple matches in a Grand Slam. You got to get through these things. And, you know, I remember, you know, trying to get a little food in me. I remember having a Coke, you know, middle of the fifth set. I was getting tired. I was dehydrated. I was just wasn't feeling right. And, you know, got involved in the fifth. It's a tiebreaker. And, you know, just wasn't right. And just, you know, obviously the soda didn't sit well. I was on empty, and it just, for whatever reason, I know the reason, I was exhausted, and just not, you know, having that Coke just didn't sit well, and got sick and threw up. And the only thing that saved me was that it was a tiebreaker, that it was going to be over soon, and that save. So if I hit a couple big shots, a couple big serves, you know, it's going to be over quick. I'm not playing this out. And that would give me no chance. The tiebreaker saved me. And, you know, I remember, you know, hitting a couple big serves and scrapping out a match point. And, you know, I remember it was a tight match. And, you know, I think he felt in there double faulted on match point. I remember the crowd going nuts for me and feeling for me and pulling me through that match. And I managed to find a way and to win it. And it was, you know, it was an eye-opener for my future conditioning and all that stuff. But, you know, I was proud of myself. Not proud, I guess, retired, but, you know, proud that I rolled this to a win, and it wasn't pretty. And sometimes you got to get through those matches.
So 2 days later, Pete, then you had a couple of days off, I should say, and then you played four sets with Goran, and you got through that. And after dropping the third, when he saved some match points, and you played, I thought, one of your cleanest finals against Chang, straight sets in it. Talk about that one. By then, you felt like you had the upper hand in the rivalry.
Like you mentioned, that quarterfinal was a big moment. Just my matches against Michael, and I think I even got better than that, and he improved. But I think that's when everything just really clicked, and I was, you know, confident with my serve volley game, and, you know, proving my backhand and making him work and dominating, attacking a second serve, and just, you know, when you're playing well against someone like Michael's style of game, you can really dominate, because you feel like you can get into a service game and make him work. And, you know, when you have my serve that I've had, it's just, and it's working and it's going in, and it just frees up the rest of my game. And, you know, I just remember, you know, it just felt like I was starting to dominate the sport, and you know, Michael was, a thorn in my side for years, and I just felt like I figured him out, and it all just clicked in that final, and another great open win, and it wasn't pretty, you know, especially in that quarter, but it definitely was one of my highlights.
Yeah, and it ended on a really bright note there, the way you played. It finished off Chang in straight. So then, Pete, a couple of years go by, some tough luck. They lost a quarter in five sets in 97 when you might well have won the tournament, could have won three majors in a year. And then 98, the tough five-setter to Rafter when you got a little hurt there. You had a little leg injury that certainly hobbled you. So then you come back in 90. You're all set in 99. You'd won Wimbledon. You'd played that brilliant final against Agassi in Wimbledon. And now you hurt your back. So those were a series of tough experiences. Was 99 particularly disconcerting in that you were primed for that tournament? Because after Wimbledon, you'd won a couple of tournaments on the hard courts, beaten Agassi in L.A. and Cincinnati. You seemed like you were really playing some of the best tennis of your career, and you didn't even get to play the Open because of the back injury in practice.
I think that was the most confident I've been going into an Open was coming off the high of Wimbledon. You had a great summer. You're just feeling great. I just remember I was practicing great. Everything was just all set to just have a really good shot at another Open. And, you know, I remember I was working hard and woke up hitting against Quirton and, you know, something didn't feel right on my back and herniated a disc and I was out. And I think it was an opportunity lost. And it was disappointing and unfortunate, you know, eye-opener for taking care of my body and doing a little longer. But I just felt like I was oozing with confidence. Felt that I was going to be a tough man to beat at that Open. And unfortunately, these things happen, and it was a tough one to swallow. And it was an opportunity because I was so confident that I just felt like I was going to do it. I was feeling that good.
So, Pete, then the next 2 years were both you got to finals both times, and you beat Leighton Hewitt in the semi in 2000, lost to Safin. Then it was reversed in 2001. You beat Safin. Mm-hmm. You had the great run over Rafter, Agassi, and Safin, then lost to Leighton. How did you never made any excuses about, but those were the days when there was no turnaround. You had to come back Saturday, Sunday, semis and final. Were you in any way depleted, or did you think those two guys just pretty much got in the zone against you? Because they each beat you in straight sets, first Safin and then Hewitt.
Yeah, I would say both. I think they played great, and I was a little depleted. And, you know, getting through that one where I beat Rafter, and I, had a tough quarterfinal against Andre. I just think, you know, having that late Saturday semi come back the next day, if I had a day off, I'm telling you, I would have felt better. Not guaranteed I was going to win, but I think it would have been a closer contest. And you know, having that quick turnaround as you get a little older is not great. And I definitely paid the price as in those couple finals. You know, I was still playing well. I was doing everything I wanted to do. I just ran into two hot guys, and maybe I wasn't at my best because of the schedule. That's the way it goes. Now that you have a day off in between, and I'm a little jealous of that. Those are two tough losses, but, you play to win these things, and good effort getting there. But
2001, would you say that 2001, given that you beat Rafter and Agassi and Safin in a row, that it was your best Open ever? Tough draw, but also the best one major you ever had that you didn't actually win?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that being playing Andre in that quarterfinal, four breakers, one of the best matches I've ever been a part of, two guys playing great at the same time. Safin in the semi, like I won the year before. Rafter, I mean, I had a tough draw, and it's almost like I won a couple Opens already, and just never playing Hewitt. It also felt pretty good, and I just maybe hit the wall, and, he got better over the last couple of years. And so I just felt it was my best Open without winning, just because who I beat and how I beat him. And, I just wish I had that day off in between the best stuff mentally, physically, to give it a better push. Unfortunately, these things happen.
So, Pete, you gave it quite a push and succeeded the next year. You came back in 2002. hadn't won a tournament since Wimbledon in 2000, yet obviously you had the finals of the Open the two previous years. And you were seeded only 17th and won that early rounder, third rounder against Rusetski in five sets and kept going through Haas. Those were all big wins. And then Roddick in the quarters under the lights, and eventually you played Andre in the final. Talk about that last Open, because, of course, that's where that turned out to be the last tournament of your career and ended on the best possible note. But were you fueled by the fact that you'd had so many tough setbacks, including the loss at Wimbledon to Bastel out on court two, that sort of gave you the extra motivation to win your fifth and last Open?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was going through some changes over the last year. I changed coaches. I think getting back together with Paul it settled me down. It was a calming effect. I have an old voice, someone I could talk to, and you know, he would remind me who I am and what I was doing out there. And so that was good, just as a person, just having Paul back in my corner. You know, I won a few matches over the summer, but going into the Open, I just feel like, you know, I had this game that can get hot at any time, that I could just get it going, and it's the U.S. Open, this is what you play for, and let's go out there and do it. And I remember we had some rain in the first week, and basically I had to win five matches in 7 days. As you get older, that's not easy, 3 out of 5. The Rusetski match was tough. The Haas match was a tough one. But the match that helped me kind of get me some energy was the Roddick match, beat him in straight sets, had a few days off before Shelkin. And I just remember feeling fresh, feeling good. And the Shelkin match was pretty comfortable. And going in against Andre, again, you know, always felt comfortable with Andre and the U.S. Open. And, you know, do what I can do with my service games, get in, you know, just play my game. And, felt good going into the match. I think the Shelkin match was good to give me energy because I played early. It didn't take a lot out of me, and I felt good going into the final.
And then you played two pretty astonishing sets to start off. And I think you kind of stunned him with that, but you really came out and played two of the best sets maybe of your career. And then it got tougher, and he almost closed him in straight sets, but couldn't quite get to the third set tiebreak, and he broke you at the end of the set, and then you had to really fight hard in the fourth from tough positions. Was that more satisfying in the end, that you had to fight, reach back with all your resources and get it done in four?
You pretty much nailed it, Steve. I mean, exactly. The first couple sets reminded me of when I played him at Wimbledon a few years back. Did everything I wanted to do, moving great. You know, maybe I got a little tired in the third, felt like I had it in my hands, and he missed an easy volley. I missed an easy volley, and I remember the crowd going nuts, and now we're in a dogfight. And again, just trying to hold on to serve in the fourth, get an opportunity, broken there, and I think at 4-all or 5-all. And then next thing, they'll serve for the match.
You did something that was, again, symbolic, I think, of you and the kind of player you were. But serving for the match at 5-4, it's 30 love, and you hit a second serve ace at 119 down the tee to get to triple match point. I remember you kind of skipping after that point. I mean, it took a lot of guts to go for that at that time. Don't you think, in a way, there was some symbolism there?
Yes, it was. It was, you know, I was going down wind at the time. It was always a little windy down on that court. And I just, you know, in the pressure moments, I could always rely on my serve. And my second serve was something I used as a weapon. And at 30 love, when I hit that serve, and that's when I knew I just won the Open. You know, I had it. And, you know, and from there, I think he won the next point, and then I hit a backhand ball at winner to do it. And, you know, felt vindication, felt great. For 10 minutes early, I was in his dogfight trying to hold on to the serve for all, and boom, 10 minutes later, I was on the tournament. So it's that's the way my game is sometimes. And sometimes it's hard to watch because it's ups and downs. And, I just remember just the relief that I felt. I'm sort of counting it out for a number of years. And, you know, just the belief that I had in myself and my game, no matter what people were saying, was something that I tell my kids. And just felt amazing. Felt like I wanted to open again. And a lot going on in my head that night and the 2 weeks after that. And coming from 17th seed to win that, showing that, as bad as I was playing for those couple of years, I get my game going and things start moving in the right direction. And
well, Pete, not many people get to end a career the way you did, on their own terms, winning a major. Mm-hmm. So, and I remember you kind of walked, I remember you were in the trainer's table for a long time, and there were a few of us standing in the hallway, and then you came out. This is after the match, obviously, and then you walked across the hall into the locker room, kind of gazed around. Were you already thinking this could be it for me, or was it not till after the Open that you started to have thoughts that that you should end your career with that win over Agassi?
Not at all. In the moment after the match, I wasn't thinking about my future. I was trying to recover, and quite honestly, I didn't think about my future until a few months after the Open. But that night, I was just, remember I was tired. I was getting tired on that fourth set. I think I did get an IV after the match just so I could recover. And, the next 6 months was my process of retiring, of moving on emotionally, what was next in my life, what was next in my tennis. And, like I said to you before, it wasn't until the next year at Wimbledon is when I knew I was officially going to retire, because I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to do the work. I didn't miss the Wimbledon. I didn't miss the sport. For whatever reason, those 2 years of not playing well, 6 years at number one, took a lot out of me. The travel, winning this last Open, not wanting to do the work, not wanting to be at Wimbledon. I think all those reasons combined was when I officially looked at myself and said, I'm retiring. I'm not playing anymore. I don't want to play anymore. And it wasn't until that next year at Wimbledon to where I was emotionally done, because I remember watching Leighton Hewitt play his first round match. And I was in Palm Desert, and I looked at the TV, and I said, it's the last place I want to be. And that's when I knew if I wasn't going to be Wimbledon. Because after a few months there, I was thinking, maybe I'll play Wimbledon. Maybe I'll just hang out, And once that went away, and you can't get up for the Wimbledon event, then why play? And so that's when I decided to retire.
So, Pete, two things. Number one, it wasn't fitting that you won the first one over Agassi in 90 and then now beat him again in 2002 in the finals, and you had their epic and some epics in between the 95 final and the 2001 quarter. So here were the bookends of beating Agassi, your greatest rival, in your first and last major title wins, and then coming back for the ceremony the next year, which was kind of a nice moment with your family to sort of do the official announcement, the official farewell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, you look back at it and you couldn't write it any better. You're a 19-year-old kid, you won your first Open with Andre. Through the next number of years, he's your rival, he's your, I don't want to say your enemy, but it was just, we developed this relationship and this rivalry that people seemed to enjoy. And we played a 95 that was very big in both of our careers, and big quarterfinal match. And then I ended it in 2002. And it was just, it was just like a perfect ending to go out on my terms against my toughest competitor on that stage. You couldn't script it any better. So, I look back at it and, there's only a few athletes that have done that, John Elway and, a few others that have just sort of go out on your terms with a win. It wasn't my plan, but, that's the way it worked out. And, for my U.S. Open experience, it was a great event for me. I loved it. Some tough moments, some great moments, but to have a 90 and a dozen years later to have a against the same opponent was great bookends.
So Pete, all athletes of your stature go through this, but you were never one that was trying to win popularity contests. It was about winning big matches and just doing your job. But now when you think back on them, how much do you miss, and I guess you've probably been asked this question many times, but how much do you miss the applause, the recognition for a job well done, competing in front of 20,000 fans and coming through to win majors like the Open? How much do you miss that now as you kind of glance back at your heyday?
Well, I miss it, but I don't need it. I miss the moments. I miss the Wimbledon final, even every year since I've been retired, even you watch Roland Klein on US Open, it brings me back. You miss that applause. You miss those moments. You miss the euphoria after you win it and you do your press and you're with your team, and you miss those moments. And the applause and the atmosphere, all that excitement. You miss those moments. And like I said, I don't need it. I just, you miss it and you reflect and you especially Wimbledon and the Open are two very special places in my heart as far as what it's meant to me, winning there 12 times combined, and that's why I play, that's why I did what I did. It wasn't a popularity contest for me. It wasn't looking to be more popular. It was about winning, about being a champion, about winning the big events on my terms, my way. And, I felt like I, throughout the 90 win to the very end, and you saw me, don't feel like I changed much. I mean, the world changed. People changed around me, but I feel like I sort of stayed the same. And I'm proud that I didn't succumb to any pressures to be more or do more, or, I just was going to grow up to be a champion and do it in my own quiet way. And I've always felt good about that.
So, Pete, finally, it's the 50th anniversary this year, which is pretty remarkable in itself. And I know it's gone by very fast for me as an observer. And seems like 10 minutes ago, I was watching Arthur Ashe win the 68 Open. And and here we are 50 years later. So, but here you are, one of the premier champions of this Open era. And only Federer and Connors have won as many among the men. All three of you won 5 Opens. So, just put into perspective for me as we close this out what it meant to be an American competing at the Open and doing so well, and as the last major of each and every season, and what you believe the Open may have contributed to who you are and what you became.
Well, the Open is a very tough major to win. It's a very emotional event, maybe because of the city, because of the people, and I think I sort of grew up in front of the New York crowd just from being a quiet 19-year-old kid that won it to 92, not sure what he wanted to 95, knowing exactly what I wanted, and having that epic match against Krejci throwing up and seeing the will that I had. I sort of grew up in front of this Open, this crowd that, in this event that always stressed me out. The city gave me anxiety. The walking in there, I felt anxiety. I just felt on edge, I didn't major because it was, I don't know, being an American, the city, the energy of the place. And I had to, get my own little world, my own little shell just to figure out how am I going to win this Open, and sort of isolated myself from a lot of different situations. But the Open was my big event watching as a kid. I remember watching, Lendl be Macro there, and Connors being Lendl, and seeing John beat Bjorn. I mean, those are my memories of the Open. And to look back and see that I won 5 and being up with Jimmy and Rogers, pretty cool. And I always look back and feel like I could have won one more, but, I was happy I won the 5. And it's just a great event, not an easy event to win. You're dealing with a lot of distractions, and I was able to handle it all and get in my own single-minded focus to win there and deal with all the stresses.
Well, Pete, thanks so much for joining me. As you know, I followed your career with a lot of admiration, and I thought you were commendable in so many ways as a champion. And it's been a lot of fun for me to sort of go back and look back across your U.S. Open career today and to get your reflection. So thanks again for joining me.
No problem, Steve. Thanks for the questions and your tennis knowledge. You get it.
Thanks for listening to Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. I'm Steve Flink, and please join us throughout August as we count down to the 2018 U.S. Open.